Following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Positively Pro-Life aims to bring you inspirational stories, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm Bonnie Finnerty, Education Director at the Federation, and I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Maria Gallagher, the Legislative Director. Hello, Maria.
Hello, Bonnie. It's nice to be with you today.
Well, it's always a pleasure to join you for this podcast, Maria. And I have to say, I am so very excited about today's guest because I admire her so much. Many in the pro-life movement already know her for her activism. And for those that don't, well, you're definitely going to want to hear her story. Melissa Oden, a nationally known speaker, writer, and author of the compelling book, You Carried Me, is here to tell us her story of being a survivor of an abortion. Yes, that's right. She survived an abortion. Her book was featured as our Lit for Life book a few seasons ago, and it was one that I just couldn't put down. Melissa's story is one that every person must hear. In addition, Maria will share an important message about maintaining optimism in the midst of Roe versus Wade. But first, we'll kick off today's podcast with an amazing story that I believe needs to be shared. Recently, Life News reported on an article that had appeared in a British newspaper about an Iranian woman who sought an abortion at 14 weeks. Because abortion is mostly forbidden in Iran, she illegally hired a home midwife to do the procedure. There was a complication. Her uterus was perforated. It's not clear if either the midwife or the mother realized it, but the baby was not aborted. Rather, the baby, still in the amniotic sac, shifted out of the uterus through the perforation and into the mother's abdomen. And there she continued to grow for another 15 weeks. Although the mother suffered pain, vertigo, and loss of appetite, she did not seek medical attention for fear of getting in trouble. When pain increased to an unbearable level, she went to the hospital where an ultrasound confirmed that the baby was alive and growing, nestled right next to the mother's intestines. Fortunately, doctors were able to make an incision and remove the baby, rendering care to both her and her mother, saving both lives. Now, this is a story that could have had a very tragic ending, the loss of the baby's life, the mother's life, or both lives. But today, both mother and child are alive. And that is the ending that nature intended. Abortion is unnatural. It interrupts a natural and beautiful process of life. In this instance, the baby, as young as she was at just 14 weeks, seemed to instinctually seek safety, preserving her own life. The desire to live, to survive, to thrive, that is the natural instinct. As a result, there is now one more beautiful life in the world, a life that was threatened but miraculously overcame. And who knows what potential that life holds? What will she do? How much love will she give and spread? How many lives will she impact? What difference will she make? How many children will she have? What legacy will she leave? The possibilities are endless because this little girl today is alive. May her life remind us to keep fighting for all those whose lives are threatened every day. They need and deserve our protection. Maria.
Bonnie, despite the disastrous 1973 U.S. Supreme Court ruling known as Roe versus Wade, there are plenty of reasons for pro-life optimism. I actually came up with a list of 49 reasons, one for each year since Roe was decided. Listeners can read the complete list online at National Right to Life News Today, but here are just a few. National Right to Life state affiliates are passing meaningful pro-life legislation that is holding the abortion industry accountable while saving lives. Parental consent laws have helped to dramatically reduce teen abortions. Websites such as teenbreaks.com are providing meaningful information and resources to pregnant teens in difficult circumstances. Events such as the National Right to Life Convention have helped to energize and focus the pro-life movement. National Right to Life local chapters are educating people in their local communities about the development of the preborn child. High school and college students are bringing vitality and a new perspective to the pro-life movement. Informed consent laws are giving pregnant women the information they need about fetal development and alternatives to abortion. Solid scientific research is educating Americans about the physical and psychological risks of abortion. Compassionate assistance for pregnant women in challenging circumstances is only a text or phone call away. Strict constructionist judges dedicated to the Constitution rather than pro-abortion politics were appointed to the Supreme Court in recent years. Public opinion polls show the vast majority of Americans oppose taxpayer funding of abortion. Polls also show that a majority of Americans oppose most abortions. Pro-life marches and rallies in local communities are focusing renewed attention on the cause of life. The pro-life movement has placed a spotlight on the tremendous potential of children with Down syndrome and other disabilities. African-American leaders are drawing attention to the devastation abortion has caused in minority communities. Dedicated volunteers are bringing vital pro-life education into schools across the nation. Celebrities such as actress Patricia Heaton are using their platforms to promote a life-affirming message. Pro-life advocates are illuminating the cause through social media outlets such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Pro-life podcasts such as this one are introducing a new generation to the cause of life. Pro-life videos on YouTube are educating people throughout cyberspace. Investigative journalists such as David DeLeiden are exposing the atrocities of the harvesting of baby body parts. The word police have yet to silence the phrase pro-life. Disability rights activists are successfully stopping assisted suicide legislation in numerous states. From diaper drives to parenting classes, the pro-life movement is proving itself as a pro-life and pro-love movement. The pro-life movement empowers women to make life-affirming decisions for themselves and their families. Bonnie.
Maria, thank you so much. It's so important that we stop and take stock of all the progress that the pro-life movement has made as we continue to fight for life. It is my delight to introduce today's guest. Life empowers women, not abortion. And Melissa Oden is one of likely tens of thousands of abortion survivors who exemplify this. Melissa is the survivor of a failed saline infusion abortion. But like every survivor, she is so much more than a survivor. Melissa is a master's level prepared social worker and the author of You Carried Me, A Daughter's Memoir. Her second book, which will focus on sharing the stories of other abortion survivors breaking their silence, will be published in 2022. She's the founder and director of the Abortion Survivors Network, the only healing and advocacy organization for abortion survivors worldwide, and the Abortion Survivors Network Education and Policy Center, which impacts policy issues relating to abortion and abortion survivors. Melissa and her team have connected with 403 abortion survivors as of October 2021. She's a frequent contributor to pro-life and conservative news outlets and a regular guest on radio and television programs around the world, including Fox News, Focus on the Family, Hannity, Huckabee, Newsmax, and more. Although Melissa's heart is for providing help and hope to all affected by abortion, she also strives to humanize the unborn through activism. She has testified before congressional committees numerous times and is a frequent expert witness in states across the country and internationally. Melissa and her husband Ryan reside in Kansas City, Missouri, with their two daughters, Olivia and Ava. Melissa, welcome to Positively Pro-Life.
Thank you for having me.
Melissa, can you recount for us the story of how you came to be in this world?
It's really interesting. When people hear my bio, they start to think, well, there must be just one person who survived an abortion. That's so rare. But in reality, my story is the story of so many people. And I think my story illuminates what is often hidden. So to highlight that, I will share a little bit about how I came into this world. You know, most of us celebrate our birthday. I celebrate the day that I was accidentally born alive. The gravity of that is never lost on me. 44 years ago, my birth mother, who really fits most statistics when it comes to abortion, was forced to have a saline infusion abortion, which was the most common abortion procedure performed back then. You know, we now know that they don't perform that abortion procedure routinely anymore because, frankly, too many of us as babies survived it. But that procedure involved injecting a toxic salt solution into the amniotic fluid surrounding me in the womb. It should have lasted about 72 hours. It usually lasted about 3 days, but we know through my medical records that I soaked in the toxic salt solution of that abortion for 5 days. While they just kept trying to induce my birth mother's labor, we now know they thought that her life was in danger. They certainly thought it would be successful, that my life would be ended. But on the fifth day, I was accidentally born alive. That's how I now get to celebrate my birthday, because an abortion failed to end my life.
Wow. You learned this information as a teenager. So can you talk about what it was like to find this information out and how you dealt with it and how you moved forward?
Every abortion survivor learns their story at a different age and stage. I now know that, you know, I'm pretty blessed to have found out at the age of 14, even though it came out in a very traumatic way. My older sister was facing an unplanned pregnancy, was considering every option. And so when our adoptive parents, who had known my story full well and adopted me knowing I was a special needs child at the time, you know, my mom and dad felt like they needed to share my story with her so she would hopefully choose life for her son and ultimately abundant life for herself. And she did that. But that's how I ultimately found out my story, is she found out from our parents during an argument one night. She let it slip that she felt like she was more wanted by her biological parents as an adoptee than I was by mine. And so here I was, you know, on a cold October night at the age of 14, asking my mom to explain to me why my sister felt she was more wanted than I was. And, you know, I'm the first person to admit back then I had no idea that people like me existed in the world. I didn't know that abortions could fail. And so my world really came crashing down that night. I think people forget and really overlook the fact that people like me live in this world. And we can't even, you know, function day to day without hearing people talk about abortion being called a choice and a right and fought for and championed as women's healthcare. And for people like us who underwent so much trauma in the womb, we experience even more trauma and shame and guilt and all of those things by simply living in this culture that champions what was meant to end our lives.
Yeah. After much effort and many years, I understand you were finally able to meet your birth mother and learn a little bit more about her story. What was that like and what did you learn?
It took me about 10 years of searching to find my biological parents. And, you know, my story is pretty complicated in terms of the secrets that my birth mother's family kept about me and the abortion failing. But it took me 10 years of searching, ultimately then took more time after that to communicate with my birth mother. But what I learned is that the abortion was forced. That's not anything my adoptive parents knew. We learned that my grandmother was a prominent nurse in their community and was responsible for forcing that abortion, also responsible for, you know, demands made to leave me to die, which, you know, sadly is still an occurrence for many children in our world. We also learned that my birth mother spent over 30 years of her life believing that I had died through that abortion. They kept it a secret. She didn't know if I had been a little boy or a little girl. And so she lived with such incredible regret and suffering until she found out that I was alive. And so it took us a number of years really of communicating and building up walls of trust and love before we met face to face for the first time. And, you know, it's often hard for me to describe what it was like to meet my birth mom, Ruth, for the first time. It was something we were both waiting for, and it was so sacred, but at the same time, absolutely nerve-wracking. But I am just so grateful to share with people that she's now a part of my life. You know, she was hurt so badly in that abortion. I was hurt by that abortion. But ultimately, you know, God allowed us to be back in one another's lives. And we actually live in the same metro community. We live in Kansas City. So my kids know her as just another one of their grandmothers. They're raised alongside their cousins. This is the way life should look. It shouldn't have looked the way that it started 44 years ago for her and for me.
Your story is so compelling, and I highly recommend that our listeners read your book because it's just outstanding. And I'm so excited that you're going to come out with a new book, and I'm anxious to read that as well. Tell me, what is the mission of the Abortion Survivors Network?
We have a twofold mission at the Abortion Survivors Network. First of all, we want to humanize the unborn, because we are living, walking, breathing testimonies of the humanity of every unborn child. So we want to humanize the unborn and educate and advocate. And at the same time, as we make abortion unthinkable, we want to heal, empower, and equip the primary victims of abortion, which are abortion survivors. We're also blessed to serve families to bring about healing after failed abortion occurs. That's a huge gap that has existed in the pro-life movement, both for survivors and for families. And so I'm happy to report that as we look through numbers, and we have a map that we'll be sharing soon with the abortion survivors all over the world that we've connected with. We're at 19 different countries right now, but our number is no longer 403. It's 536 abortion survivors.
Wow. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Bonnie.
And yet, Melissa, there are those people who want to deny your existence. I remember reading in your book that as part of your master's degree, you wrote a paper telling your story, and your professor didn't believe you. Why do you think some people struggle to believe that there are abortion survivors, and how are you changing that?
Yeah, that's a common occurrence. I mean, let's be honest, even in the pro-life movement, I still meet a lot of people who aren't aware that abortion survivors exist. And I think the problem is twofold. I mean, first of all, we know at the heart of the matter, everyone knows what abortion is, that it's the innocent taking of a human life. So of course, people don't think that children can survive abortions. But the other piece to that is that we live in a culture that's been so influenced by that abortion narrative that it is buried and silenced the voices of anyone whose experience flies in the face of it. And so our culture has done a powerful job of really quieting people like me and hiding the truth. And so that's really what we are aiming to do through the Abortion Survivors Network is, no matter how a survivor uses their voice, we want to heal them and empower them and equip them. So if they feel called to even have a private conversation, that's making a difference in our world. So we're going to change the narrative on abortion, one conversation, one abortion survivor at a time.
If you had a chance to address the justices of the U.S. Supreme Court, what would you say?
How much time do we have? You know, I think the one point, and I've asked Congress this numerous times, and I would love to ask the Supreme Court the same thing. You know, as someone who survived a failed abortion, you know, when did my rights to bodily autonomy begin? We talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but without the right to life, there are no other rights. So I really need them to reconcile for me this whole concept that we saw discussed in Dobbs, which was, you know, women need abortion and bodily autonomy. I need them to tell me when that began for people like me and when that begins for unborn children in the womb.
You know, Melissa, you make an important point that this abortion was forced on your mother, And a lot of people are unaware that a majority of post-abortive women say that they felt coerced, either subtly or overtly, into getting the abortion. So it's not the free choice that the abortion advocates sell it to be, right? There's a lot of coercion involved.
Significant coercion. You know, statistically, we see numbers like almost 64% of women identify feeling pressured. I know National Right to Life has put out some statistics. You know, one of those last ones I saw was, you know, a clear 28%. We're talking about coercion. But we know, I think if we could have an honest conversation with women, we would find high, high statistics of coercion and force. And, you know, for me, that's always the most humbling part is when we're out on the sidewalk or we're engaging in conversation, those people who are attacking us want to deny our humanity, deny the truth. We know that behind that, there is some level of pain, whether for them or someone that they know. And so that's why it's so important that we do lead with love. It doesn't mean that we skirt around the truth, but it means that we understand that that person has gone through something just like I've gone through something.
So
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
On that note, what would you say to a young woman if you encountered a young woman who is contemplating abortion? What would you say to her?
That abortion is not the only option, that there are so many other choices available, that that person's life is not going to end. Circumstances change. Abortion is final for that child, and it will change that woman's life forever. And, you know, I think it's so sad that so many women feel completely unsupported and have nowhere to turn. And so I want women to know that no matter who's forcing, coercing you, backing you into a corner and making you feel like this is the only option, our world is full of people. The pro-life movement is full of people and organizations who want to help you.
Absolutely. Melissa, what kinds of challenges have you faced getting your life-affirming message out, and how have you overcome them?
Oh boy, how do we start? You know, I think it's often a long journey for someone like me to even find a place to share their story. That's another part of our work at the Abortion Survivors Network, is creating this platform for survivors to approach and even share their story. You know, I think I blindly grappled about 15 years ago to find a place for my story to be heard, even in the pro-life movement. So that needed to change so we could be accepted and supported and believed and have our stories amplified. You know, I think the other part is, you know, finding this consistent opportunity to make an impact. I think so often we are invited to speak, which is always an important thing to do. But I wish people could understand how scary it can be for someone like me. I mean, I'm known as being bold, and that's something I've, you know, been able to do over the years as I've learned and I've grown. But it's a very scary thing to show up and face the very people who are championing what should have ended your life. And so that's an obstacle I've had to overcome, is really going face to face and testimony to testimony with people who, you know, would rather that I had died. And trust me, I've heard it. I've had them say it to my face. I've had them say I am no longer relevant because that abortion isn't performed anymore routinely. I mean, you fill in the blank. So it is that face to face shame that you experience, people wanting to isolate you, silence you. You know, think about the media. Very rarely do you see an abortion survivor like me, even in the media. I mean, we are blessed to get opportunities in the conservative media, but every single day that is a struggle to get abortion survivor stories out. And so, you know, we fight this battle really on multiple fronts. And that's why really it begins for us with healing at the Abortion Survivors Network, because to overcome all of those obstacles that we battle every single day, we have to be as strong as we can to engage in that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. You have to have very strong convictions to be able to go on those public platforms and be vulnerable and talk about your story and face that criticism, which seems so unfounded and so unjust.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because we live in a society that says, believe victims, right? Believe women, except there's a large proportion of victims and women that they don't want to hear from, and that is us. And, you know, I can tell you that even though I've been doing this work for, you know, well, almost approaching two decades, I am constantly reminded every single day just how much abortion survivors have been hurt by our culture. I am working now with, you know, young survivors. We're talking babies that we hear from their parents. So our youngest survivors are infants. We have survivors as old as their 90s. So they were surviving illegal abortion attempts or at-home attempts to abort. These are people who have never been heard in our society, who feel so deeply ashamed and wounded by what happened to them. We have, last week we heard from the parent of a four-year-old. I had the mom of a 19-year-old who was horrifically hurt by her failed abortion. I have abortion survivors who have had abortions themselves.
Wow.
We are a population of people who have been marginalized and overlooked for so long. And so I think we're going to see something really interesting happen in the pro-life movement and in our culture as more survivors find out they're not alone and that they have a place for support. You know, this is how we change our culture, is we amplify the messages of people who have lived to tell the story.
Yes, and Melissa, one of the most powerful videos I have ever seen is your Faces of Choice video that came out a few years ago, and people just asking, can you look me in the eye and say that I shouldn't exist? That was just so powerful. Do you want to talk about that a little bit as we finish up here?
Absolutely. Yes. The Faces of Choice ad campaign was unveiled at the March for Life in 2020. It was originally worked on to be a Super Bowl ad. If people want to go down that rabbit hole, it's pretty interesting how we were shut out of it making Fox News. Not surprising for anybody who's been involved in pro-life work for very long. But you know what? It still made an incredible impact by unveiling it at the March for Life and then, you know, really educating people about how we were shut out. And that ad features abortion survivors around the world. And that is really what we're living with every single day, is can you look me in the eye and tell me that my life was not worth living, defending, saving? Because behind the word choice, there is always a person.
Absolutely. We're going to have to leave it there. Melissa Oden, dramatic testimony. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you for all you do.
And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.